What's up? What's popping?
Oh, just thinking about fruitcakes.
I wonder why that is.
Because today we're going to talk about fruitcakes.
The cakes that literally no one wants. It's not fun cake. Someone talks about cake. You know what I'm like? I'm like, what kind of icing? Is it like pound cake? We got lemon icing. Is it red velvet? We got cream cheese. Fruitcake, there's no icing involved. I don't get it.
Fruitcake is the type of like holiday thing that if someone showed up to my home with it, I would be like, "Oh, so you hate me?"
I hate fruitcake. I've never had a fruitcake. I don't even touched a fruitcake, but that's not going to stop us from talking about them today. All right, here's the question of the scam. We're not going to think about fruitcakes. I'm going to ask you something independent of fruitcakes, but it's relevant yet again. All right, so let's imagine a world where you are a scamming hussy. You are a thief. You are getting millions, 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 millions of dollars.
Love it, love it, love
I mean, minus the fact that you probably would go to jail. That's not the point.
Right.
So it's
The
anger.
millions comes first, and then the
Yes,
jail. You know what I
right.
mean?
So
So.
let's, but right now, again, we're only on the front half of thinking about consequences. So let's say that millions of dollars falls into your lap through, your conniving trickery. And you start spending that money because that's what you do. Nobody ever scams and then is like, let me put this in crypto. They're like, let me get something that comes with a receipt. Now, people in your life are going to see you with this money. How would you explain where these millions of dollars have come from?
I would simply say, guys, I'm really humble and I'm really just like a quiet person and I'd want to make you feel uncomfortable, but I'm actually the heir to the Pink Lotion family.
Oh, wow.
My last name is actually Cass Pilotion. And when my family and I were discussing like how would we live our lives, we would just like live small, but bring in the wealth in small increments because you are the biggest, like black hair care company and you're the heir of it. And so I would be like, and if it was not Pink Lotion, you'd be like, so you know what, guys? Like my family actually invented castor oil. I don't want you to see me differently after that.
So I kept that
I
in.
kept it in. So I'm gonna ask that same question to you, Taylor. You have all this money. What are you telling people when you ball out?
I'm gonna tell them I'm a city girl. I'm gonna tell them that I'm gonna be like, Anna Nicole Smith honestly walked so I could run. And I would just say, when I was young and dumb, because that's the key. When you're young and you make a bad choice, it's fine because you're young and you don't know any better, right? So that's the key to the lie that I'd have to tell. I'd be like, yeah, when I turned 19, I married this man and he doesn't live in America because I don't want you going to Google. You're not
No,
Googling
no,
no
no no no no no
certificates,
no.
okay?
He actually hates Google, so you can't even find him. He's
Yes.
very private.
Yes, okay. I married some cajillionaire in a different country when I was 19. I went on spring break. Some people go to spring break and they come up with a bad tattoo. I came back with, a bag. And my very rich husband and I, no, he did not die, but we have decided to end things because now I'm an adult and I found love and I want to marry the love of my life. So we did get a divorce. And because I was 19, I didn't sign any paperwork because I was like, I
Because
can't sign
he loved you
anything.
so much that he was like, why would I ever have my 19-year-old bride
Exactly.
sign a prenup? Why would I
Exactly.
degrade her in that way?
So that's exactly what I would tell people. I'd say I am not the OG city girl because that's Anna Nicole Smith.
May she rest.
Okay, but I was second generation city girl, and I just happened to say to myself at 19, working is dumb. My version of intersectional feminism, it includes a world where women don't have to work. And so
Amen.
I was just trying to preemptively get out of working. So I married this man when I was young, and now we're calling it quits so I can marry my true love. And he's paying me my cash out. This is relevant.
It's all relevant. For this episode, we're covering the 2013 embezzlement case that involved the Collins Street Bakery in Corsicana, Texas. And it's like this small town bakery that's best known for their fruitcake because apparently the girls in Corsicana, like, they go up for their fruitcake.
I mean, Corsicana, when I first learned about this, I was like, very familiar because not only is Corsicana home to the fruitcake empire of the world and ExxonMobil, Also home to the Navarro cheer team. Also, what's up, gang gang?
Also, don't forget Trinity.
Saucy's and Titty, okay. Right? The greatest rivalry in cheerleading since Bring It On.
At the center of this scam is this guy named Sandy Jenkins, and he was the comptroller that worked for the bakery, who went through 888 checks and embezzled $17 million from this, like, small bakery. And I just want to pause because I'm just like, wow. A bakery that's in that small town that's known, they sell other, you know, baked goods, but best known for fruitcake, which is kind of only relevant during the holiday. They, like, had millions of dollars for this man to embezzle. That's something.
Like, I, again, am not interested in any cake that doesn't have icing, okay, either frosting or, you know, lemon. But I guess if people like fruitcake, this is where they're going.
Absolutely.
I mean, apparently, like, people that have ordered the cake from this particular bakery include Chuck Norris, mm-hmm. Grace Kelly.
Yep. Princess of Monaco, something. Monaco. However you say it.
Okay, never been there.
Never been there. They don't pay me.
Grand Prix. And then Grace Kelly and then her daughter, Princess Caroline. Yes. That's kind of nuts. And there was even a tin from this bakery in a Godfather movie.
So it's Sandy, and then it's also his wife, Kay. And Kay didn't really work in the bakery, but what she did do was gladly spend the money that Sandy stole on lavish cars, trips, and $1.2 million all at Neiman Marcus.
Honestly, a dream. I mean, she probably bought four things at Neiman Marcus for $1.2 million, let's be real.
Yes.
But a dream.
Well, that Neiman Marcus, they, like, went on to say that after a while, they just stopped having things to sell her because she would just come in so frequently and just be, like, dropping things. I want that. I'll take that. I'll take that. And they also had nicknames for them.
Well, it's Big Oprah Energy.
Big Oprah energy. Okay. I'm buying the entire store.
What's a price tag? I don't know her.
So you brought up that Corsicana is home to Fruitcakes and Navarro Cheer. We all know that it's such a tight-knit community.
Yeah.
Like, everyone knows everyone's business. You know, you can't get away with gossiping about people because that gossip will go right back to the person that, you know, you're talking about literally by EOD.
Yeah.
It's not, the gossip isn't lingering for too long.
No, there's no multiple business days for delivery. They said by the end of business, I'm going to hear that you were talking about me on the other side of town because 14 people done passed the seat of telephone and now I know what's up.
I mean, you're gossiping about, like, Joe to, like, Joe's brother and you have no idea because you forgot because you just love to gossip. Ha, been there. And so, and it goes back to them. And I think that, you know, how small this community is in Corsicana, it helped Sandy in his whole, like, means of scamming, right? It's because you have this town where no one really wants to, like, out him. They see him with all this luxury stuff when at the time when he's balling out, but you don't necessarily want to talk too much trash because it's going to go right back to him, and you don't want to say something to someone else because it might go back to the wife. And then a lot of it seems like in this small town too, like, status matters, even though it feels so low stakes in a small town. I just think it becomes just, like, higher stakes,
right?
And so you have these, like, book clubs, and you have these social committees, and you have these,
like, those dinner clubs, supper clubs,
the supper clubs, and you have
church,
and it's very, like, respect. So I think in this town, even though a lot of them, you know, there was a lot of questions, it was very red flag that a man who's working at this small bakery, who at the time is bringing in $50,000 a year, is all of a sudden, like, riding around in all these different cars, and you don't want to question it, because to question it, I think, would just bring up too much drama that you don't want. It's a can of worms you don't want to open up.
You don't know, like, who's going to get woven into the web of your gossip, right? Like, it's like one thing when you're like, oh, how did he get this money? But then, you know, I heard that so-and-so, you know, so-and-so at the bakery also. So it's just like, it's not insular. So I do think that, like, there is an element to, like, that small town community and everybody knowing everybody's business being partially what motivates people to keep their mouth quiet when they want to ask questions. But I also think it does motivate people into being like, I know your business, so mm-hmm. the life you're living doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So let's give a little bit of context to, like, what this bakery is, what their deal is, because even though, you know, fruitcake, in my personal opinion, is a white person food. It literally doesn't matter because, again, the Collins Street Bakery is literally the largest fruitcake company in the world. Mm-hmm. And regardless of the fact that, like, I don't know a single person who's like, slice me up some fruitcake at a barbecue or at Christmas. Someone is slicing up these cakes because they're selling over 1 million cakes a year. And, like, this is a 125-year-old small business. Like, family started. Mm-hmm. They even cite, like, the Ringling Brothers Circus as, like, back in the, like, late, he was the 18, like, 90s.
Yeah.
That man, they were like, he was buying our cakes, giving them to people. And we think that giving them to people as he traveled was our influencer marketing.
Yeah, okay? Absolutely.
Who needs Instagram when you got Ringling Brothers Circus?
And we also can't forget that it's, you know, Texas, and so there's a lot of oil money there.
Yeah.
So, like, even though it's, like, a small bakery, I'm sure that they have, like, if not, like, benefactors helping them out, you have a lot of people who are just spending because they want to support.
And they're invested.
And they're invested in it, and it means so much. And, you know, no one messes with Texas.
They don't. So even though we're not eating these cakes, and even though we don't know people that are buying them, like,
They're
being bought. They're being bought and they're being sold. And apparently their annual earnings are somewhat crazy, mm-hmm. like $30 million a year. And they say that in their normal year, outside of the holiday time, they make like 10 to 20 cakes a week. That's
Damn.
It. Again, it feels a little suspicious because how are you sustaining a whole company on 20 cakes that are like $40 and you got a whole bakery. But then they say that around Christmas or like starting, you know, in that like fall, October season, they ramp up production to making 20,000 cakes a day. And they ship over to 190 countries. So those tax and duties also are probably helping them stay afloat those other like 10 months out of the year.
Okay, for like 100 years, everything is fine, right? They're securing the bag. Nothing crazy is going on in this small town. The money is flowing in the way it usually should be, you know, flowing in. But in the early aughts, execs start to notice that they aren't bringing in the money that they should be. And they start to try to, like, figure everything out. Because they're just like, wait, for 100 years, things have been fine and chill. We know when we get fluctuations. We know when we're, like, killing it. We know when there's a lull. Why all of a sudden are we just in this, like, a little minor recession? Like, I mean, what happened?
The math is definitely not mathing, and let's try to figure that out.
Yeah. Apparently they do, you know? They start to ask around and see, like, who has any, you know, pieces to this puzzle that we're trying to figure out. So they go first to the business comptroller.
Because he's the person, if the math isn't mathing, go ask the mathematician.
Yeah, like,
ask the man with the calculator, the pencil, the paper. What's popping?
What's going on? Because it's his job to pay the bills. You know, like, they're the senior management exec, and they're responsible for overseeing the accounting and the financial reporting of a business, and it's this person's job to create the invoices and pay the bills. Except that the person whose job it is to make sure, like, the money is all good is our man, Sandy. The person who is also stealing the money. So the guy whose job it is to pay the bills is also paying his own bills with the money that's gone missing.
But, you know, honestly, isn't that always the case? Like, it's always the person in charge of the books that's skimming off the top of the books. Because when there's no other adult in charge to be like, what you doing? They're just like, whatever I want. And so I kind of feel like it was probably easy for him to sort of evade detection. Oh, I don't know what you guys are talking about. The math is mathing over here. Y'all dum-dums are the ones that can't figure it out. Go talk to somebody else. So that's what they do. They end up going to a marketing exec. And she's like, y'all, IDK, like my BFF Jill, I didn't do this. I don't know what's going on. So then they start pivoting and they're like, all right, well, maybe it's something with like ingredient loss, right? Like maybe we're, you know, maybe the sugar is going, the sugar's being spoiled. Maybe we're not cooking the fruit fast enough because we're only making 10-pound cakes. Fruit cakes. That is a very clear distinction. We're only making 10 fruit cakes a week. Maybe ingredients are going bad. Maybe there's, you know, loss. And then they're like, no, that's not it. But then, you know, it sort of gets to a point where no one can figure this out. And the drama starts rising like dough because it's a small town. And so, you know,
when you know everyone, it's really hard to then continue to speculate, because you don't want to point your fingers at Bob over there in finance, because maybe his wife is your third grade, you know, kid's teacher,
right?
Okay, or you can't go over to Sally Beth, okay, in packaging, because maybe she's also your daughter's Sunday school teacher. So that's where we sort of get into that thing where it's like, when all of the obvious things don't work, conspiracies like run wild in your mind, but not out of your mouth, because you're going to be stepping on somebody's toes and ruining your personal life and your professional life by making accusations.
And don't make it a daughter of an oil tycoon.
Okay.
Because she will delete you from the world.
Okay. Literally pull that funding for those 8 months that they must be secretly funneling into.
So they have to get an outside source, because that's like the only way that you can kind of get someone who has no, you know, like favorites or just has no stakes. Like they are just like, I'm an outside person. I'm coming in to clean up your mess. And if I see that someone that you care about is the center of the mess, well, I don't know them.
I mean, it's like New York City says, if you see something, say something. And so if you're an objective party, I'm saying whatever I gotta say. And I'm gonna bounce diggity up out of here. Well, that actually, the person who, she didn't bounce diggity, but that's not the point. The point is you got to get in that fresh perspective.
Oh yeah, no, she did not pop out of anywhere. She was actually a newly hired employee, and she was brought in to put the pieces together, figure out what's going on. And her name was Symmetric, and she was, you know, considered an outsider because she didn't really have any ties to this family-owned thing. And she was also a Black woman.
And you know what I have to say to a Black woman being the one that's cracked the case?
Love a Black woman for infinite to infinity.
It always be us. It always be us picking up the pieces.
Honestly, did you think a Black woman today? Because what we do is what needs to be done.
If you eat fruitcake, I need you to go think a Black woman today.
No, I need you to go Venmo Symmetric.
That's what it is.
You open, need to open your purse. Because if you're eating fruitcake, it's because this woman kept this business afloat. But we'll get into that right after the break.
The execs at Colin Bakery, they know something's up. They know that money's missing. They know that it's not about like rotten flour or like, you know, not enough sugar. And so they need someone who is not like deep in within like the, you know, corporate click, like someone who's sort of an outsider but still trusted, to come in and crack this entire case. So enter Symmetric. She's a young Black woman who just started. She's the youngest employee of the company, and she must be that girl because she has all these like old school Texan men, white men, being like, here are all the keys to the castle, open up every single door and find where this money is at. She's getting up all in the exec business. Now, as she's all in this exec business, she starts to cross-reference receipts and bank statements, and begins to freak out because she realizes who did it. And it's that moment where I could just imagine like a young Black woman being like, oh shit, like not only is someone who is in charge of the money, Sandy, the person that's doing it, it's also someone who's like a high up exec, someone who's like my boss, and like they're respected. So she essentially discovers that there's a $10,000 check written to Capital One Bank, but the issue is the bakery does not even use Capital One as their vendor. So she's just like, like this doesn't look like a spelling error. This looks like someone actually created this check and cashed it.
I literally cannot imagine having just like the guts that Symmetric had to have in order to do what needed to be done.
Yeah.
Because the way that I'm thinking about this is like, what do you do when you are specifically hired to crack a case and you find out that the person you're supposed to report the findings to is the culprit? Like, I don't even, like, what do you do? What do you say? Like, I just am thinking about a version where I'm like, I completely get how maybe you meant to type like, I don't know, Chase and Capital One came out. Call me freaking Cher from Clueless. I just, you know, like highest decibel of voice to be as, to be like, to minimize the threat level of being like, use a thief, right? Like, what is the cutest way to say that?
I don't know. And I just, as a 22, 20 something year old me, I think I would just create like a fake email, like checks and balances at like HR at.
But she doesn't do any of that. And like the craziest also, well, I should say the other thing she does that's totally crazy to me. She confronts this man on a Thursday. The way that I would have been literally a tummy in knots, okay?
I would be rehearsing on a Thursday to tell him on a Friday. Possibly on a Monday.
No, Friday.
I would have need to see Jesus on a Sunday first. Okay. I would have need to have a moment where I'd be like, yo, is this it for me?
Literally, God, please intervene and order my steps. No, I need Friday because basically I need to hide. I'm going into witness protection on Saturday and Sunday. So that's us. But Symmetric said no. So on a Thursday, she goes up to the boss and she was like, hey, what's up? What's popping? Let's go swing to the water cooler real quick. Let's have a little touch base. And she basically says, so the problem is I'm realizing that like it probably was you. And Sandy, okay, being the scholar that he is, he basically is like, oh, it's probably like an automation error. Like, I'll look into it. Which, as someone who in college would be like, oh, like an email got stuck in my outbox, or like, oh, I'm so sorry. I thought I hit send. Also, I'm lying. I was doing that in high school.
I did that yesterday.
But nonetheless, he says, it was a mistake. I gotta go to a doctor's appointment.
I'll see you later.
BRB G2G. BRB G2G.
The doctor's appointment? Like, no, he did not use my 8th grade to 12th grade lie. Like, he did not use the lie a teacher would say when I clearly cut class and was in Starbucks thinking I was cute.
Oh, no, he went home that night and, like, made a doctor's note.
He literally asked a friend of his, can you sign this? Isn't it, like, my signature?
Because I just feel like, if you have the gumption and the gall to steal the amount of money that it would later come out to be, you know, that he stole, like, your scam game is that high. You can't be out here borrowing tactics from elementary school children. Trick. A Black woman who clearly grew up in a house with a Black mom who said, you know what, I'm not Boo Boo the Fool. She clearly was able to embody that. And she kind of realized that he went pale.
Mm-hmm.
Something in the milk didn't seem clean.
That ain't it.
Okay. Didn't sit right in her spirit. But that was okay. Because she was like, bye. Good luck. Have a great doctor's appointment. And she spent the rest of that weekend, well, Friday and that weekend, digging in the dirt. She was like, I am going to figure out, like, to what extent this is. How far back does this go? How much? So, as if Black women don't do enough unpaid labor, she spent her entire weekend basically figuring out that from 2005 until 2013, this man had written 888 checks. Not 886, not 887.
Not even 8.
He not 8, but he said 888 feels like a lucky number, and that's where we're going to start, and that's where we're going to end. And it wasn't like he was writing checks, you know, for a dollar here, $20 there. This man wrote 888 checks that totaled $16.5 million. And honestly, when she told everyone, they were like, can't believe it. He's so quiet. And I was like, what a benefit of being a white man. You're quiet and everyone's like, innocence.
This is why we say believe Black women.
It's all cool because our girl, Symmetric, aka Symmetric the Spy, all right, second of her name after Harriet, was like, I've already told everybody in charge. I've cracked the case.
Symmetric spends like 4 weeks scooping up all this evidence, but there still isn't enough to press charges. So the only option for the execs to do is to really just fire Sandy, but it's not like obvious. Like, they don't make much ado about like one of the top execs being fired, you know, like on the heels of all this money going missing.
Well, that's also because it's embarrassing for them, right? Like, you imagine you are like, hey, we had this person who we trusted to be in control of the money, and because none of us did anything about it, not only was he in control of it in the business, he was in control of taking it out of the business and spending it on himself. Like, that's kind of embarrassing. That happened in the Inventing Anna thing, right? Like,
Anna was stealing from all of those financiers. And then they basically were like, we're not going to blow up the spa, in trial, because it's embarrassing for them. How did you get conned?
Right.
When somebody should have been in charge.
They have the cops there on standby, but the cops are outside and they're only really there just in case Sandy wows out. And he doesn't. He just like packs his bags up, gets his little box with his like sad plant, I could imagine, and just walks out.
Imagine like you steal $16.5 million and they're like, all right, girl, well, get your stuff and go. Like at my job, if you literally steal a Post-it, they're calling the feds.
I mean, it was like you're always walked out with the whole big thing. It's like when someone gets fired, it's a parade. Everyone knows. Everyone's popping their head out of the office.
Little cubicles, water cooler, stop, drop, and roll.
You know, it's everyone has to go to the bathroom suddenly. Suddenly, everyone's in the hallway,
their
too.
Bladders are so weak only because Joe from accounting got fired, Cass. I mean, it definitely has big Game of Thrones atonement energy.
Just because they fire him, it's not like they're like, okay, moving on. We're just going to cut our $16 million loss. Like, they call the police, and they turn over what they know, thanks to Simitrik, and so they can start this investigation. And while the whole town knows what's happening, because once again, small town, baby. The tea is turning.
The tea is on the kettle at church, at school, in the parking lot, at the stoplight. The town is going to do what the town does. They're going to talk about it. And also, doesn't matter, because Sandy's not even there. That man is gone like the wind. Fabulous. Okay. A lot of people learn from this whole thing that he had a second house because that's where they think he fled. That second house was not in Texas, though. Totally different state. It's interesting because while he's able to evade the police because he's got this second house and no one really knows where it is, which is probably where he is, it also complicates his situation because essentially, to start dealing with fraudulent money across state lines, it becomes a federal offense. So just because Sandy was out here stealing little, you know, cake money in Corsicana, once that money makes its way to this mysterious house in another state, the feds now get involved. This went from like, oh, this is like little crime to like, oh no, you're probably going to Club Fed.
Sure, you kind of need a house. You don't need two houses, but you know, if you're in the state, you need some type of dwelling. But here's the greed, and that's like being generous, you know?
Right. Okay, hold on. Like, this is how I'm like thinking about this, right? Like, you're like, oh, like Texas gets hot. Maybe it's hot here. Maybe it's dry. It's like, I wanna bounce diggity to a safe haven. Unfortunately, that safe haven was also in a hot state, so I don't know what reason he would have for fleeing one state to go to the next, but he was prepared no matter what that reason was.
New Mexico is a very beautiful state. Like, I do understand, you know, the need. You have desert, you have, you know, turquoise.
If you're Sandy, that's also where your second house is.
It is, and that's also where you can park all of your luxury cars. And because here's the thing, it's like, it goes from, like, needing a new Mexico house. But then my man gets $3 million worth of watches. You only have two wrists, though, and you can only wear one watch at one time. And even if it's Sandy and his wife, Kay, that's two wrists. Like,
I mean, says whom? He's like, hi, it's called fashion. Look it up.
Here is my stack.
A sleeve, okay? Some of the girls get tattoo sleeves. I'm getting a Rolex sleeve.
It's an arm party.
Okay, 14 Rolexes on the left, 14 on the right. And they're all set for times in different time zones because I got houses in different places.
They wanted to buy cars as frequently as people get oil changes.
And that's not like a colloquialism where it's like, she changes boyfriends like you change your socks. It literally is, the car needs an oil change, babe. And instead of going on to the Jiffy Lube like you've been doing for your entire life, they go to the dealership.
Like, for context, that's about like 3,000 to 4,000 miles, right? Like, so every 3,000 miles, you're like, you know what? Whole new car. I get anxiety just having to go to like my like car mechanic and just being like, hey, it's the standard checkup. Can you imagine going to a dealership and be, oh, what am I talking about? When you have $60 million, there's literally no need to be anxious.
Yeah, are you kidding? You're anxious because you're like, they're going to tell me this and I got to pay for that. And what's this light? Literally a light comes on, they say, throw it away.
Throw the whole car in the garbage. I don't want to even see that one again.
They're treating them like rappers treat Air Force Ones. They're like, wear them one time. They get there's a little crease. Duck it into the trash can. But I mean, okay, spicy take. It is outrageous for these people to have ultimately, I think the total number was like 38 or 40 cars. Like, it's a lot of cars. It's a lot of cars. But the thing about it that I will say is brilliant, just going to put this out there, every car that they buy, except for the exception, I think, of like four, was the exact same color and make and model.
So
the whole thing was, so Sandy's wife, Kay, it's like Kay is always driving around in this, like, you know, like cream colored Lexus truck. And so every time she's replacing one, it doesn't seem crazy to people because they're like, oh, there goes Kay in that cream colored truck, as opposed to being like, there goes Kay in a Mercedes, there goes Kay in a Porsche, there goes Kay in a Range, there goes Kay in a Mini. Like, they kept it in such a way that, like, it kind of actually is not noticeable. Because if you think about it too, like, if they're doing this over the course of what, like 8 years, car models don't change that much model to model. So she's always got the newest. But again, it's so, like, it's so subliminal. I certainly wouldn't be able to tell. I'd just be like, oh, there goes Kay in that gas guzzling car. And apparently Sandy once bought the wrong color and Kay made him take it back. Cause she was just like, I drive a certain color car and I drive it for a reason, sweetie. Can you please do the one thing that I've asked you to do?
Which then is like, makes me realize that Kay, even though she was like clearly not working at Collins, she wasn't like writing the invoices and cashing, you know, the fraudulent checks. Kay had like some sort of knowledge that there was something happening that was really dishonest, even though they were living great. But because at this point, like, they're able to take jets, like, they have, they all together, they take 232 private jet flights to the Caribbean, to Napa. One time, they just take a jet just to go to Austin for lunch. So that lunch was basically like $8,000. But can you imagine? It's just like, oh, we're going to get like the tuna tartare and get like a salad. And then we have to gas up the jet we took to come here. So they have their jets, they have their watches, they have their two homes. And now it's time for the bomb fashions. And so they start going to the Neiman Marcus. And one personal shopper is like, they came all the time and they bought so much stuff that we literally ran out of things to sell them. But he had to make excuses to everyone else around him and the people that he worked with and, you know, the people that like saw him about town, because they know that like 50K is not, you know, to have you live in large.
They also may not even know what his salary is, right? Like, they may not know that he's making $50,000 a year, but they also know that he's not an oil tycoon. So what are you doing sitting next to me at the corporate company retreat?
Right.
Talking about I'm getting on a jet, like, to go to Napa.
Sir, we make cakes. Okay. We make cakes and your shoes are worth like my entire life.
I mean, yeah, literally cakes, not bricks of cocaine, not, you know, buckets and barrels of oil, literally fruitcakes that most people have an aversion to. It's not even a popular cake.
So he begins to tell them stories. He creates stories that are, I think, really stupid.
I also think the fact that you say stories with an S as plural, I'm like, that also in itself is a problem. I need to tell everyone the exact same story. If I was Sandy, I would be up at night with Kay with a big, like, PowerPoint, basically presenting the lie that I was going to tell. We would have dress rehearsals of me telling this lie to people.
Yes.
But instead, Sandy was just like, yeah, I'm going to say what I feel like, when I feel like, to whomever I feel like, with no regard.
Vibes.
Big vibes energy. And honestly, to that, I say tomato.
So some of the lies include, my uncle owns a funeral home and
that's why we have a private jet.
He lets us borrow his private jet because we bury so many bodies that we can have a private jet.
I don't even know what a funeral director, and I saw Buried with the Bernards on Netflix, pretty good show. Free plug. Those people were not making enough money for a private jet.
I mean, I'm gonna take it back. 6 feet under. Was there ever an episode where the family went on a jet?
No. I think that capitalizing off of, you know, grief. I think that, you know, they have to help people through their grief. And so sometimes they upcharge you on a casket. There's not enough caskets to upcharge to justify a jet.
There's not especially in a place where I'm sure the Walmart caskets is like the leading casket.
He also tells people that his dad collected expensive watches and now he's selling them.
Now, I hate this one a little less.
Yeah.
I hate this one a little bit less. I think that this one though is it's half of a whole lie that you need to tell. The lie needs to be, my dad had expensive watches. Mm-hmm. I sold some. I invested the money. I pulled it out of the stock market.
Boom.
But he only does the first half. I don't know in what world you're selling a 16. Like, I want to know where your dad got it from. Like, are you secretly a Rockefeller? Like, where is this watch? Because he just, I don't know. It just feels crazy to me to be like, yeah, I sold a few things and that has spun into all of this. You need exponential growth, buddy. And mm-hmm. I just don't know, unless your dad is procuring, you know, rare watches every single time you see him and you're visiting him daily, mm-hmm. the math just doesn't add up.
He also said that he flipped cars, which I was like, flipping a depreciating value and then being able to flip it so much so that you make millions, not going to happen. Then there was the inheritance, which, like, cute. Again, that's essentially what I did. But you see, I laid out a name. He had to have created a family tree. I would have been like, you know, this money goes back to 18 something something when my, but he didn't do any of that. And also, it's like, if it's an inheritance, then you come through the town dripping, you know, you come through fire. Like, he had to, like, get to that level. And so people are just like, yeah, he may have had this inheritance, but, like, we watch this glow up happen. If you're rich, you come rich.
But again, to my point, this one would be a good one. This is good in theory, but it's half of a whole lie you need to tell. Hi, I have a trust fund. I didn't get access to it until I was 53 years old. Why is it that 53 was the age? Well, my grandfather died at 53. And in his will, he was like, if I could live my whole life without all this, so could you too. Like, that's what you need to say to people. It can't just be, I'm a trust fund baby, and you're a grown middle-aged man.
Because he's spending stolen money across state lines, it's now a federal crime. So the Corsicana police can turn everything over to the FBI, and the FBI get a warrant to search his Texas house, and that allows them to look into anything that's of significant value. Once the FBI starts digging around, they find a bunch of stuff that's expensive, like a grand piano, a wooden sauna.
What does someone who lives in Texas need a wooden sauna for in their basement? Like, just go sweat outside on your back porch.
So they notice this safe, right? They get a safe cracking expert. They come through, they bust it open, and they find all of this jewelry. But the warrant is for the whole house, and they want to find every last dime of that $16 million. So they move up to Kay's closet, and they find these notebooks. And they realize these notebooks are ledgers of all the things they bought. Which, like, if you gotta lay low because you're stealing, like, why note everything?
I don't know. I think of kind of like a budgeting tool. Like, you know, my mom writes out every single balance of every single check that she's ever written and cashed and all her debit card charges.
But it's her checks.
Right. So he's got to keep track of his checks.
Of other people's checks.
Of other people's money.
Okay? Just seems like a paper trail that you wouldn't want to be found, that you're just like, let me make it real easy for you to, like, see what the fuck is up.
Well, I also don't think that they thought that after 10 years that the feds would get a warrant into Kay's closet specifically. So if we're being honest, this is probably smarter than some of the other girls who are probably like, I would do it on my phone. And it's like, no, babes, don't do that. At least on paper, we're kicking it old school. And somebody has to happen to be in your house. I don't hate it. I actually don't hate it. I'm like, I like to know, as someone also who kind of gets off, like, some people do whatever they do, like, that's their kink. I love that for them. Mm-hmm. My personal one is being like, how much money did I save? It costs what? And I got what off?
Meanwhile, I would just want to hide everything. Like, my Neiman Marcus, because at this point, Kay has a small Neiman Marcus offshoot. She has, like, Neiman Marcus off the rack in her closet. I would just keep it all in suitcases. Like, you would go into my house and you'd be like, wow, she's living pretty humble right now. But then again, this is Kay and Sandy, and they have, like, 30-something Porsches, like, parked outside, so they don't
really
know anything about
being humble. But also, how many suitcases do you own?
I'll put that shit underneath.
To store $1.2 million.
I'll put it underneath the floorboard at this point. I want you to come in and be like, look at that. She only has one black dress.
What is she, a cartoon character? Wears the exact, like, Penny Proud every day of that show?
She has two black dresses in her closet. So the FBI realize that the things in the ledger aren't all in the safe. And now they're on a chase to look for them.
And much like everything else in this story, like, weird circumstances all kind of fall in place where everything blows up and falls apart. So our story now takes us outside of Corsicana to the city of Austin, which seemingly feels random, except for the fact that, yes, we do know that that is a place that sometimes Sandy and Kay like to fuel up their jet to go to for lunch. It also happens to be where their daughter lives. So one day, there's an off-duty cop minding his business, going on a hike, and he notices this glint that's like along the edge of the lake that's on his hiking path. He goes up, he pulls up to it, and picks up a very expensive watch. And he's like, this is weird. Why is this diamond watch just like laying and chilling along the side of a lake in nature? But he picks it up. He goes, I'm going to keep going. Keeps going on his walk. 5 minutes later, what's that? Another watch. Keeps going. What's that? Another watch. This man ends up collecting 16 watches off of the coastline of what's got to be like the most unvisited lake in Austin.
It's like raining expensive watches at this point.
Just washing up, like Ariel from her treasure trove is just like, let me drop these off on land in case Eric is here and needs to know what time it is. So anyway, he has like 16 watches, super casual.
He's like, Mother Nature is being so good to me right now.
Yeah, Mother Nature is like, I want to be on time. Like, she's letting us know what time it is.
He's like, I know I'm a good manifester, but damn.
Watches on watches on watches. So he takes the watches to be authenticated because he's like, first of all, this is diamond. This is not, these are diamonds. This is not some like rinky dink you want it in a Chuck E. Cheese, you know, grab and drop ball game. He's like, what is the value of this? The authenticator's like, I don't know, babes, but these are very nice and very expensive. And so with that information, he then decides to go back to his police precinct in Austin and is like, found these watches. What's up? What's poppin'? Austin Police Department has these watches. And because, I don't know, some adult there is in charge, they were like, let's talk to Rolex and see what these serial numbers link back to. They call Rolex and Rolex says, let us check our records. Let us check our own personal ledger. And they realize these are registered to one Sandy and Kay Jenkins. So ultimately, through some more digging, they're able to figure out that these people live in Corsicana. They call the Corsicana police, and the Corsicana police say, hey, Austin police, actually leave us out of this. Just go straight to the feds. And again, because the feds got money, okay, they got money for safe-cracking experts, they got money for warrants, they also have money to send divers back to that lake to go see if there's any other weird things that someone named Cass has manifested into the lake in the middle of Austin. So not only do they find an additional 22 watches at the bottom of this lake, for a total of 38 watches that have casually been disposed of, that are made of diamonds, that are made of platinum, that are made of gold, they also find a literal gold bar.
So is it safe to say that Sandy and Kay freak out because they're like, oh, they're on us. Let's go dump all of our jewelry that we bought at Rolex on our cards that trace back to our names and pack up those gold bars and let's just get rid of them, babe. Let's dump them in the water. And I don't know, they'll just like wind up down the Nile River.
Well, I think the answer to your question is yes, it's safe to say that these two are chuckleheads. I don't know if their plan was to go back and retrieve them, because that would be my plan. That would be my plan. I'm doing some...
Would you hire some deep sea divers?
Are you kidding? I'm getting certified at the YMCA to scuba, and I am going down right before dusk, not at night. I'm not dumb. And I'm going to get down there, and I'm scooping them up. And I would have done it straight up treasure style. Hey, babe, can you get those Ziplocs out of that drawer where we keep the aluminum foil and the saran wrap? I got some Rolexes. I just need to dump them in there and grab an extra one for that bar of gold. Now we're going. We're dumping them in the lakes. Because also, I think about it, too. What do people do at lakes? They fish. And I will be danged if somebody's fishing. And when they cast their line, instead of pulling up some one, you know, eyed sea bass, they pull up my Rolex watch. I don't think so. So no, I'm putting them things in a bag. I'm dumping them in the middle of the lake, and I'm coming back when the
coast is clear.
For I just see the vision of like in Titanic when Rose dumps the jewel in the ocean. Like that's what I just see them doing with every single watch and being like, but we're gonna be right back, babe. Yes. Like don't get too deep. Don't get too deep.
Oh no, get deep. I wanna know where we're gonna find you. Just don't go anywhere. Don't grow any legs and walk out of here.
We'll never know why Sandy decided to throw $500,000 of his own stuff into the bottom of this lake. Because honestly, as he would later admit in his own deposition, he didn't even know why he did it. Regardless, this man was very clearly way in over his head, just making poor decisions left and right. And none of that helped him when the FBI actually came and knocked in with handcuffs in hand.
So we're back. It's almost 3 weeks after he was fired, and now Sandy gets arrested.
It's about time.
It's about time.
For 3 weeks, he's just been like, I don't exactly quite know, because the people in the town were like, if it was me, I'd have been out of the country. Sandy was not out of the country, so he's been like vibing around Corsicana, I guess.
He's been vibing around in like $1.2 million worth of Neiman Marcus clothes. Like, not all at once, obviously, but like, maybe he wears like $50,000 a day, like in his looks, you know?
Well, I don't know, because it seems like the FBI got a lot of the goods and the ledgers. So I don't know. Did he maybe keep stuff in different places? Like, where do we?
Well, we know some places include a lake.
So who knows? Maybe he did stash some things like a not idiot in the town of Corsicana that he could go back and scoop up.
But you know, like so many of our scammers, it's not like the biggest moment. Like, it's not like, oh, he got caught because like the hand was caught in like the fruitcake jar. Like,
right.
He gets caught based off of paperwork connected to the second home in New Mexico. And then I wonder if there was no second home in New Mexico, therefore no mortgage paperwork had to be completed, would he have just never gotten caught?
Well, no, he would have gotten caught. He just wouldn't have gotten arrested. Like, the arrest came because they were like, oh, we can prove that like This was a federal crime over state lines. Mm-hmm. So if Sandy had been just like spending money in the state of Texas, mm-hmm. or even if he had been booking private jet flights from Texas to Napa or Texas to Jamaica or wherever, mm-hmm. like he could have argued, well, like I didn't cross any state lines with the stolen money. So they may not have been able to get him on federal charges.
Right.
But that house in New Mexico, I think, is how he got caught on those charges.
Yeah. So they're basically applying for their mortgage loan. On the application, they had to fill out income. And so he had to put how much he was making. Sandy writes down that he was taking home $25,000 a month, which he did because he was stealing it. But that's not what he actually earned, babe. Like,
I know. Honestly, file this like under the importance of reading for comprehension. The question, Sandy, was how much do you like earn, not how much do you take?
Like in the real world, like when you're not a scammer, like how much do you earn?
Earn.
It's like white men have no bounds, because it just, to me, like it just feels risky to say you bring home $25,000 a month when the paperwork the IRS has on you says you bring home $50,000 a year. But Sandy and Kay signed the document, and under penalty of perjury, meaning they swear that the contents of the document are truthful and they acknowledge that if they're lying, they get in trouble for it. They knew that they were lying, but they still signed. Because I guess, like, not to armchair therapy, but I'm an armchair therapy, like the psyche of the scammer is once you get away with so much, it's like, they can't stop me. Paperwork be damned. Like, no one can stop me at this point.
Also, I feel like the fine print, which is like the law, don't break it. People are like, didn't see it, so I don't know what you're talking about.
And this is the move that gets them charged with making false statements to a financial institution and then gets them both arrested.
Imagine you're Kay and you're like, so my husband stole the money. I didn't steal the money. I just signed some paperwork that he filled out. She's not wrong.
Not wrong.
But the like, FBI man. Was like, babe, you lived in that house, didn't you? You co-signed on that, didn't you? And I'm like, that's why you gotta read what you sign, okay? You gotta read everything from the voucher when you want to go swimming with dolphins in the Bahamas all the way to I'm gonna read this thing because I'm about to buy a $7,500,000 house.
I also just file this under Bonnie and Clyde gone all wrong.
Well, nonetheless, they both get arrested. First, it's Sandy, but Kate ends up not getting arrested She doesn't get arrested for like a year later, I think. Mm-hmm. And then they end up getting sentenced at the exact same time 2 years later. And something that was kind of interesting was that the FBI had the opportunity to say, okay, we're going to take all of these seized assets and we'll sell them for you, Collins Street Bakery, or we can sign them all over to you, Bakery, and it's up to you to do what you want. Mm-hmm. And the bakery decided that they were going to take everything and sort of sell it themselves. Mm-hmm. So in terms of what the FBI confiscated and turned over to Collins Street, apparently they recovered 532 luxury items. Oof. And here is a nice little breakdown of what some of those 532 things are. All right, 38 cars.
Wow.
So as we know, Miss Ma'am was getting a new car, which I'm shooting an oil change. And I guess no one wanted to take advantage of like a turn-in program, an exchange program. Where are you keeping 38 cars?
What is this garage? Do you keep the cars in the empty Neiman Marcus that you bought all of the items from?
Probably, because I don't quite understand where else I don't know where I'm putting 38 anything.
I don't even know where I park my one car half the time.
So can you imagine? You're like, oh, let's go get that. Oh, wait, don't know where it is. So remember, all of those are like the same car. There's a few different ones, but mainly they're all the same Lexus car because Miss Ma'am needed something new. They also confiscated 41 bracelets and 15 pairs of cufflinks. We're going to stop right there for 1 second. It really sounds like Sandy was like spending money on his wife before himself. And that's like an admirable husband trait, I must say. Like he said, here's the deal. I want you to have bracelets. So many bracelets that it is a, again, just sleeves of diamonds, baby.
Decks on decks of diamonds.
Literally like dripping. Okay, drip, drip, because these diamonds might fall off because there are so many and you can't keep track. Meanwhile, he says, I'm going to give myself just 15 little cufflinks. That's a pair of cufflinks every day for 2 weeks. She, on the other hand, he was like, you could wear something different for over a month. And honestly, I love a husband that loves his wife more than himself.
Mm-hmm.
Hate men, but love the concept of this.
Love the concept of how that scam worked out. Because Kay, you know, she was looking cute and she was looking... Kay should have actually been the one that had the best, like, excuse and alibi. Because it was really her that looked rich.
Right, right.
Like, she should have been thinking about, oh, I'm, you know, tied. That's actually me.
Yeah, I think that it would have also just made sense because she was further removed from the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so that does make that easier. But again, nobody went with that story. All the stories that Sandy came up with were me. And I would have been like, yeah, it's Kay. Kay is rich. We didn't know. I married Kay. Because then when the folks come and knock in, oh, this is my wife's money. Then they're going to be like, Kay, tell us your deal. And no one's going to be looking at you. But Sandy didn't think that far. But he did think also about how he could spoil his wife further, including buying this woman 21 pairs of earrings. And obviously we are not talking about a 3-piece earring set from Madewell. Like
no.
The girl may or may not be rocking, you know, on any given day.
We're talking uncut gems.
Okay, uncut gems. She also had 61 handbags, 45 necklaces, 9 sets of pearls, 55 rings, and 95 watches. And all of this, like, cute little, you know, drip drip, baby, like, go get my bracelet, go get my cufflinks, my diamond set, all valued at almost $3.5 million.
Remember when we discussed about how there was like all of those watches in the lake, and yes. I said it was just like divine manifestation, and clearly it wasn't. Clearly they dumped the jewelry in there. When asked in the deposition why he tossed the watches, Sandy said that he didn't know. It was dumb. He also admitted to throwing platinum watches in the trash.
I mean, dumb. It was chaotic.
Panic.
Unnecessary. I'm like, you couldn't go dig a hole in a yard somewhere and be like, I'll be back with this later.
So they're arrested. Kay is charged with conspiracy to commit laundering, making false statements to financial institution, and she pleads not guilty, even though her signature is literally on the document. And even though, like, babe, you did commit laundering. Like, you did it.
You did it. And it's sort of like that thing where, like, I don't know. My mom used to always be like, I'd rather you tell me than I have to find out some other kind of way. And it's like, babe, we know you did it. So why don't you just tell us instead of us have to tell you all the other ways that we know that you did this.
And she kept maintaining that, like, she didn't know that the money was stolen. She just thought with her man's 50K salary that they were able to live that large just by, like, blessings, I guess.
I mean, or maybe she really thought that they were out there flipping luxury cars and maybe she got to keep all the cars that he didn't sell. It just happened to be the same car over and over again.
She doesn't realize how much $50,000 actually is. She's like, yeah, that
that affords that.
AKA me as like a 7-year-old being like, I want to have a BMW. My mom being like, oh, do you have BMW money? Didn't think so. Okay. Maybe that's K. Maybe that's K.
Sandy pleads guilty to one count of mail fraud, one count of being in a conspiracy with his wife to spend the money they stole, one count of lying on a loan app, facing 70 years in prison. On May 20th, 2014, he pleads guilty and he serves 10 years, 120 months in prison. And everyone at like Collins Bakery in the town, they're just kind of like, that's it. For all of that, he just gets like 10 years.
We have no bonuses for many years, and he gets to go to jail for a few years. So as we know, our girl Kay is really doing the absolute most to try to tell people that she didn't do what they already know that she did. And she actually, for almost a year, is able to delay her jury trial because she keeps filing different kinds of motions. But ultimately, she's like, okay, enough is enough. They found the ledger. Oh, I did sign that paper. I guess you guys are right. And on May 29th, 2015, she finally pleads guilty. Now, she does do this weird thing where she's like, I'm actually not going to admit that I didn't know where the money actually came from. Like, I didn't know it was coming from the bakery. But I can admit that, like, it came from somewhere weird. And, like, that's not okay.
Like, things are kind of weird. And, like, I get that.
Like, I get it. I couldn't exactly piece all of this together, but like, sure, we can agree on. Let's agree to disagree on if I knew where it came from the bakery, but let's agree that like it was a little fishy, and I should have known that.
Like my hand wasn't in the fruitcake jar. Like I didn't do the stealing. It may have happened, possibly.
But it's okay. She basically ultimately is like, all right, this was some willful blindness on my part, and the judge was like, it's okay, girl. 5 years probation.
I'm not mad at it. Like, she reaped the benefits of the scam and she shopped like no tomorrow, but she wasn't employed by the bakery. She was not the one that was like defrauding her own workplace.
I can give you that. It's sort of that thing where like, you know, you come across some money, and I didn't exactly look into where it came from. I didn't look, like, I didn't ask the question. So I'll give you that. But also I know that the judges out here that are just like probation, I'm like, all right, well, let me go and marry somebody who's stealing $17 million if my only punishment is going to be probation. Like, right. Where are the scammers at? Wife me up, because there's no penalty for me. I want to ride the coattails. So while Kay only got a slap on the wrist and Sandy was sentenced to prison, I think that he definitely had a very difficult time navigating sort of the weight of what he had done.
Right.
He ultimately was sending letters and actually called the CEO of the bakery,
right,
to apologize for what he had done. And ultimately, 4 years into his sentence, in March 2019, he did take his own life. Now, apparently Kay has never acknowledged the bakery folks at all whatsoever for anything. But again, in the eyes of the law, she didn't know that it had anything to do with that. So I guess she's like, I don't really need to say anything.
I think when you have such a small, tight-knit community and such like this big, it's a big bakery. It's like a famous establishment. The least you can do is just like hit up certain people that you know you've impacted and just kind of be like, sorry.
Anyway, you know what time it is. We do the same three questions. We do a little analysis, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go ahead and start with that first question and you let me know what you think.
Yep.
All right. So, on a scale of 1 to 5, uh-huh, 1 being straight trash, 5 being pure excellence, how would you rate the idea of the scam?
The idea of the scam, I'm going to rate it a 5. I think I just think that stealing from your job is like apple pie. It is like so American. It's so standard. It's like you are the person who pays the bill. So it's like you pay a little bit of their bills, you pay a little of your bills, you know? So I'm going to give it a 5 because it's just like, out of all the scams, I think it's straightforward. I think you were the person with the golden key. You opened that, you know, safe up. You took a little money. Yeah. So I'm going to pose that same question to you.
I want to give it a high score. I want to give it like a 5. I think, like, you're right. It's very, it's been standard.
It's been done.
As I'm struggling, I'm like, I actually can't give it a 5. That's why the idea is not that great. Like, mm-hmm, it's not that innovative. Okay. I'm actually for the same reason, mm-hmm, but like other end of the spectrum.
Right.
I'm going to give it a one.
Like, it's basic.
It's not as basic. It's just, people do this, and so what happens is, like, when money goes missing, in a corporation, mm-hmm. the first person they're going to go to is the person in charge of the books.
Right.
And so for you to be the person in charge of the books, I'm like, this feels kind of risky. Maybe you should have tag team with somebody who is in production, somebody in the warehouse. So the idea that like you're going to be the person they go to, I think in the beginning seems genius. Mm-hmm. But like, again, every single time a company's like, we've been robbed, who do they go to first? The money guy.
Yeah.
You don't want that attention first on you. I mean, when you watch an episode of Law & Order, the person who did it is usually someone that you see in the first 10 minutes. So I'm going to have to give it a one. Okay. So next question is, on a scale of 1 to 5, how would you rate the execution of the scam?
I'm going to give that the one. That's what I'm, because the execution, I feel, okay, I'm gonna copy a little bit what you said. The execution in being that like he wrote false invoices, mm-hmm. or he wrote invoices to banks that they had no relationship with. No, like at least give me a little Photoshop. Photoshop is there at this point. You have to create a paper trail that looks legit. Like it could have happened, so that even when Symmetric would come up to you and be like, hey, you know, this is not supposed to be the way it is, you can at least say like, oh my gosh, I like overpaid the vendor that we use by accident. But because like he decides to use this bank that they don't use at all, it's just like, no, at least like the laziest thing you could do is just make sure that the way you're stealing the money adds up to what the actual company's paying. So if they use Chase or whatever, you got to use Chase too. You can't use your bank. You can't use your organization when you want to steal money from a company that is not using that same, you know, vendor.
And also I'm thinking like, if I'm a detective and I'm just like, what banks does everyone in the office use, right? It's a lot easier to be like, interesting. You're the one anomaly here. Like it just, I will agree with you. And I think that originally I was going to give it a 5, but I do think that maybe I'll give it a 4. Mm-hmm. I think that the execution was just fine because it worked for 10 years. 10 years. Okay. 10 years of telling crazy lies about uncles with funeral homes and dads and watches and resold cars. Like, it makes no sense to us, but like, it made sense to Corsicana, or it made sense enough for nobody to ask those questions. I do have to take a point off for that. So our final question would be, how would you rate the responses on a scale of 1 to 5 of our players during their actual takedown?
So this rating is just based off of Sandy and Kay thinking that they could dump all of their jewelry in a lake. So because of that one little instance, I have to give it a 2. It's like, Swiss banks exist, offshore accounts exist. Tag team with your daughter, maybe. Maybe she has some thoughts and ideas, like, to where this thing should go. Like, the takedown, and then you panic, and then you just, like, the first thing that comes to mind is dump it all in a lake where it could, who knows? Like, you're just seeing this, like, go into the depths of water. You're not seeing what else can happen to it. You're not seeing that someone goes on a hike and they find it. It would haunt me. I would literally just have dreams of like the Loch Ness monster coming out of the water and just being like, hey, I found diamonds, guys.
Yeah, there definitely was no control over that. And I do think that like Sandy evidently has never seen a mafia movie, because it's like you go to a real body of water and you put cement like shoes on people so nothing buoys up to the top. And right. I just feel like this isn't a question of access, because that man literally had a private jet. So next time we're going to Napa, that's where I'm dumping. Like, let's charter a plane right now. Because honestly, if they see that I've already chartered the plane, what's one more dime going to be? Exactly. Right? Like, if I'm going to go down for that, what's one more trip? I would totally agree. I think that I'm going to have to give their responses during the takedown maybe a 3. I think that I agree with you. Throwing away platinum, diamond, bars of gold into a lake in the town where your daughter lives is very weird. Like, I would go further away. I also would like to take points away from the fact that you had 3 weeks from when you got fired to get out of town and be gone like the wind. And he chose not to do that. Mm-hmm. And I am sort of like, dumb, childish, points should be taken off for that as well. So when I deduct all of my points, I'm like, I'm giving this literally straight trash a 1, but I have to give them 2 extra points to bring my total to a 3, because Kay and her commitment to, I didn't do that, what are you talking about? That's my signature, but I didn't do that. Yeah, I saw that paper, but I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, I lived in that house, but like, what mortgage? That is admirable.
Sticking to the story, that's a Meryl Streep. Give her her Oscar.
She or Sydney Sweeney.
That's
okay. Okay, Sydney Sweeney's coming for her lunch money. That is
Sydney Sweeney.
Okay,
that is Zendaya.
I just feel like there is something admirable about being that delusional that I'm just like, you know what? You take that in stride. You commit it to your story. I can't even commit to like when you give someone like a fake name in a bar. Like,
right.
I'm like, what is the name I gave? No, she said, I lived in that house, but I don't know what you're talking about.
I have no idea.
My husband came home with some keys and I said, okay.
Collins baked fruitcake. I don't even know what fruitcake is.
Yeah, I work there, but I'm unfamiliar with the company. Honestly, all in all, I do think that I have to give them a little bit of credit. So I've averaged up our scores and your rating for this scam is actually a 4. Mm-hmm. So ultimately it kind of worked out that you gave this a high rating.
Mm-hmm.
My rating average is a 2.6. So I guess I'm not as impressed.
You're not as impressed.
Largely because these people just were making choices that they didn't have to make. Some people have made them before. But that, again, they're committed. If nothing else, these two were committed.
And that's fruitcake.
And that's fruitcake.